Hello, sports fans. It's Friday, October 4th, 2024. Welcome to Cleats by Dre. I'm Dre. Let's talk some sports. What does the word believe mean to you? No, really, what does it mean to you? Is it a word you just throw around when you think something? I believe. Is it a funny subplot for you in the Ted Lasso series? Oh, a coach puts a sign up in the locker room and a team of misfits wins the Premier League. Are you a Mets fan? And you've learned that you gotta believe is just one of those Mets slogans. We're always the underdog, so sure, let's say it. It's fun, it's our thing. Is it convenient to believe? And then when you don't think something is likely to happen, you jump to the other side because you want to be the first to say, nope, it's done, nope, that's it, it's over, season's over. Because you think someone will look back and be like, oh, this guy, yeah, this guy here said it was over first. Yeah, congrats to this guy. I learned less than I probably should have during my four-year education that my parents worked hard as hell to put me through at Duke University. But one thing I learned from the coach of the basketball team there, you might know him, Coach K, that the team doesn't need you to cheer when they're up. They need you to cheer when they're down. They need you to believe when it doesn't look so good. They need you to spur them on. So keep that in mind, my fellow fans, my fellow content creators when you're following the Mets. Keep believing. If there's ever been a team you don't quit on, it's this one. How many more ninth inning rallies do you need before you learn you don't stop believing? More on belief at the end of this episode. But wow, we are basking right now in cleats land. The Mets, with a history-making 4-2 come-from-behind win over the Milwaukee Brewers. They score 4 in the top of the ninth versus all-world closer Devin Williams. The Mets win the series 2-1. They're moving on. The game capped by Pete Alonso's 3-run bomb. Pete, the first player in MLB history to hit a go-ahead home run while trailing in the ninth inning or later of a winner-take-all playoff game, per OptiStats. Whoa, that's a stat. So here we go. Let me give you a glimpse into my game-watching experience. We'll go chronologically through the whole game. I'll take you through what I was doing, where I was. I'll share with some extra stats to think about. And we'll end up with something meaningful. If you're not a Mets diehard, feel free to skip towards the end for the what this all means. If you're a Metso, buckle up. So leading up to this game today, Thursday, butterflies all day, right? I'm a nervous wreck. And there's something about playoff baseball that, like, every pitch, I think almost more than any play in other sports, every pitch could mean something towards one end or the other end. It's nauseating. And I think what adds to it, maybe it's the long baseball season, right? 162 games. You make the playoffs, so you feel like you got that stamp of the playoffs, and then, oh, I mean, it used to be one game wild card. Now it's a best of three, and it's just, it is fast in and out. You know, and with baseball too, there's a very little guarantee the better team always wins each series. It's the ultimate crapshoot. You see it in all the different teams that have won lately. There's actually some research I came across today that says, you know, that really puts this in perspective. So the stat was that the NBA has an 80% rate of the better team advancing. That's in quotes, right? Because that's not always record, but someone's vision saying this is the better team advances. For the NFL to match that, they would need best of 11 series, right? And NFL is one game, right? And so there are a lot of upsets in the NFL, but they would need best of 11 series to match the way the NBA in their best of 7 series gets to the best better team advancing. But get this. For the NHL series to match that 80% rate in the NBA, it would be a best of 51. They'd have to play a best of 51 in the NHL. Do you have certain confidence, 80%, the better team wins? Major League Baseball, playoff series would have to be a best of 75. 75 games between two teams in a series before you can confidently say, yeah, the better team's going to win 80% of the time. It's just wild, wild differences. And you see with the NBA where a lot of times really the best team does win at the end. Now, we could debate on a different episode as to whether that's more exciting for the playoffs or not, but just interesting. And that contributed to my butterflies all day. And some challenges while I'm trying to watch this game, right? The start time. I thought this game was on at 8:40 Eastern time. I planned my whole day around it. You know, we're getting home. It's Rosh Hashanah, right? We're getting home. We're getting the kids ready for dinner. You know, I'm going to play a little Mario Kart. I see a tweet at 7:05, 7:10. The game started. So ESPN, what you doing? You know, you're already, the broadcasts are boring. The on-game, the in-game interviews. And you can't, you're moving the start time just day of? Like, just got to get it right. And it's just ridiculous. And honestly, in the middle of the game here, I gave up on the ESPN broadcast. I went to the Mets radio. I went to Howie Rose. And I was trying to watch it on TV and listen to the radio. Impossible to keep the whole thing in sync. Because the radio, I think it adjusts in each. I was ahead, then I was behind in the TV, and I kept pausing it. It was a tough viewing experience, but, you know, what I had to do too is I had to get deeper in this game. This was a big game. So I decided to follow along in the box scores with Baseball Savant, a very, very, you know, very reputable site for analytics. I wanted to see exit velocities. I wanted to see expected batting average on hits, things like that. So what I'm going to do, we're going to run through it. We're going to go through the whole game. This was an epic game, guys. Go through the whole game, and I wrote notes as I went on and gave different comments on it. So top of the first, we had a Lindor double to lead it off. Then Vientos struck out. Nimmo struck out. Alonso flied out. My notes in that is that Nimmo should have had that walk, right? It was a 3-0 count. We have this ump, Carraza, who already, earlier in the year, he's the one that gave Diaz a 10-game suspension for the sticky stuff. We're already skeptical. Low strike zone. Turned out to be just a wild, wide strike zone, inconsistent throughout. But that Nimmo walk could have gave us some runs, like possible in the first, but we couldn't bring Lindor home. Bottom of the first, Jackson Churio with a single, Blake Perkins strikeout, Contreras with the ground out, Adames with a pop out. The Churio comes out with a rope, and he's, wow, what a player. After his two home runs in game two, he's the next guy. And kudos to the Brewers for knowing it with the $100 million extension before the year. Kudos to them for knowing it. He's going to be a problem for the league, but luckily not for us anymore. And just a good job after the leadoff guy of Quintana holding it together, and that becomes a theme. We go to the top of the second. The Mets go pretty quietly, right? Iglesias a line out, Winker a ground out, and Marte a line out. Bottom of the second, we have Gary Sanchez, his career being rejuvenated with a double down the line. And Quintana, good job to hold it together. Strikes out Rhys Hoskins. Strikes out Sal Frelick. Pops out Joey Ortiz. He is finding a way, Quintana. We go to the top of the third. Still 0-0, right? Mets get a flyout from Taylor. A strikeout from Alvarez. Lindor stays hot with a single. And Vientos with a deep flyout. What's interesting about that Lindor hit with two outs, Gary Sanchez, you know, put in there to catch. Him and Contreras switched. Sanchez is an awful defender. Yankees fans know that. That pass ball brought Lindor to second. That could have been a big play. And that Vientos deep fly, I highlighted that watching Baseball Savant, because that deep fly from Vientos, 361 feet, it would have been a home run in one stadium out of 30. And New York fans, you could guess that stadium, Yankee Stadium. If that was in the Yankee Stadium, Mark Vientos would have had a two-run homer in that inning. Mets come away with nothing. So we go to the bottom of the third. We're doing a Bryce Terrain ground out, Jackson Sherio line out, Blake Perkins with a single, and William Contreras with the ground out. Now, I'm not doing it justice, right? Jose Iglesias at second with an incredible defensive stop on the Terrain liner ground out. And this is where I like the stat expected batting average. Think of it as the chances that that would be a hit if maybe the fielder was in a different position, based on how hard it was hit. Terrain had a expected batting average of 600 on his liner ground out that Iglesias took. And I don't remember the Churio line out. That had an expected batting average of 700. So very easily, the stats are telling us the Brewers could have had first and second with Terrain and Churio on base, a single by Perkins, probably scores both of them because they steal. The Brewers could have had two runs there. But look, Quintana and the Mets defense. The Mets defense really stood up. Top of the fourth, we got a Nimmo fly out, an Alonso pop out, and Iglesias ground out. The Mets offense is struggling at this point. They're just not very dangerous. My notes, Pete's off, and he's not going to find it, I put in quotes. So maybe I'm not always believing, too. And the strike zone is just struggling here. We go to the bottom of the fourth, and we have a single from Adames lead it off, and then a line out from Sanchez, ground out from Hoskins, ground out from Frelick. My quote here, Jose Quintana, rubber band man, wild like the Taliban. He was just hanging on. He was just holding it together. He was flexible. He was finding a way through it. I remember they barely got Frelick. Was that a ground ball? Expected batting average of 350 on that ground out by Frelick. I think that was Lindor, but he's a speedster. We're through four, and it's 0-0. So we're going to go to the top of the fifth. And the Mets, Winker gets hit by a pitch. Strikeout by Marte, strikeout by Tyrone Taylor, and a pop out by Alvarez. And look, at this point, tip your hat to Tobias Myers. I never heard of this guy before today. How's he doing this to us? I saw a stat 2 years ago. He was 1-5 with a 7 ERA in AAA. He had 11 swing and misses today out of 66 pitches. That's like 17%. His swing and strike percentage was under 10% throughout the year. That's a big indicative stat of how good your stuff is, right? He was striking guys out, and they took him out. And we'll come back to that. But we go to the bottom of the fifth here. We have a ground out from Ortiz, a ground out from Terrain, a walk by that dangerous man Churio, and a ground out from Perkins. And my notes here are just how good of a shortstop fielding is Francisco Lindor. Just consistent, solid. Note here on the strike zone, right? On Perkins, I think we stole a strike in the low strike zone. And I'll say one good thing ESPN did for baseball, and this point is probably decades back, they introduced the box. I feel like ESPN was the first ones to put the box. I think SNY, the Mets broadcast, they resisted it for a few years. We like seeing the strike zone box because we're ready for robot umps. We like to know ball or strike. Lindor with a couple good plays here. And look, Quintana won a tough battle with Perkins, with Blake Perkins in that at bat. We're through five and we're scoreless. We go to the top of the six, and I give Howie credit here, right? Howie Rose on the Mets. Started to compare this game to the 2016 wild card game, the Giants and the Mets. You might remember it. The Mets lineup was pretty feeble in that game, but there was, Syndergaard was dealing. It was 0-0 through six. I think it was 0-0 probably even through longer. With Howie Rose, Mets announcer, I didn't love how he gave fans some trouble for not showing up for that national series at the end of the year, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday games. He's a Mets institution at this point. It's great to have him and listening to him in the playoffs. But top of the sixth, the Mets go Lindor flyout, Vento strikeout, and Nimmo flyout. So my notes is just, Vientos just looks overmatched tonight. And you got to give him some slack. He's a rookie. He's been great for us. Sometimes he's just not going to have it. And kudos to Pat Murphy, manager for the Brewers, right? Seemingly made the right call, pulling Myers.
right? Lindor had been giving Myers trouble. Trevor McGill, one of their best relievers, got Lindor out. You know, so pushing the right buttons.
But in the bottom of the six, we send Quintana back out there. And he gets Contreras to fly out. He gets strikeouts from Adames and Sanchez. My notes are Quintana in all caps. What are the performance? Six innings, gutting it out. Legendary performance. Get him a start in the Philly series. This Mets rotation has been the story over the second half of the year. I know we talked about June, July. The offense was carrying it, but this rotation has been carrying this team now. That's a big development. Okay, after six innings, I was actually, my setup was, because I wasn't really ready for this game at this time, I just went to my home office, had the monitor up, had the computer, but then I heard that my boys want to watch with me. So after the sixth inning, top of the seventh, I'm feeling good. All right, we're at the hit. I go downstairs to watch my oldest. So top of the seventh, what do we have going on here? We got a Pete Alonso strikeout. We got a Jose Iglesias ground out and a Jesse Winker strikeout. I'm already questioning Mendoza's loyalty to Pete, hitting him fourth today. I would have hit him seventh or eighth, given how he's been hitting lately. This guy Mears that the Brewers bring in is dealing somehow with ERA close to six, but he looks unstoppable. The Brewers bullpen is the story. We did not want to get into a close game with the Brewers at the end of the game. Their bullpen is incredible. Seventh inning stretch, we go to the bottom of the seventh, and things unravel. Murphy pulls more good buttons, right? Pinch hits Jake Bowers, the lefty, for Hoskins, who has done nothing. He takes Budo deep. Next, Sal Frelick takes Budo deep. We're down 2-0. Joey Ortiz with a line out. And that's it. That's it for Budo. Thank God Mendoza was quicker than he was Maton. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Last night. Brings in Diaz. And it's scary, right? Turing with a walk. Churio with a flyout. I mean, there's stolen bases in there. Perkins with a walk. They steal more bases. And Diaz gets Contreras to strike out. Who Contreras really was not scary in this series, considering how he's been hitting all year. But my notes on this is, you know, Budo, God, he was great 2 days ago. He's great all year. Untested. Now he's tested, and he failed this test. I mean, the Frelick bomb. Frelick hit two home runs and 522 at-bats during the year. And I, at this point, I'm like, you know, the bullpen, this was our Achilles heel all year. You know, we knew it. Even Diaz is a roller coaster, but he gets out of this jam. But we're down 2-0. We can't be feeling great, but we got to believe, right? This team has told us. So top of the eighth, they bring in Freddy Peralta, right? And I'm feeling good. Wow, we kind of got to him 2 days ago. Is he ready for this? Gets Marte to ground out. Gets Tyrone Taylor to fly out. Gets Alvarez to ground out. Warning track power for Taylor all game. Honestly, I would have pinch hit JD Martinez for Alvarez. Alvarez is not as consistent. You know, I would have get JD at bat. But we're going bottom of the eighth, and Diaz looking good. Adames a strikeout. Sanchez a ground out. Bowers a strikeout. Diaz looked awesome. You know, and at this point, I'm writing, let's be clear. If the Mets don't have to play that doubleheader Monday with the Braves, right? If it's a normal Wednesday, Thursday game last week, well, guess what? Diaz pitches in the eighth inning of game two this week. He didn't have to pitch crazy 40 pitchers on Monday. He pitches yesterday in the eighth instead of Maton. Maton, I'll figure out how to pronounce that by the end of the postseason. Mets sweep. So I'm already like figuring out, my sour grapes. But Diaz was huge today. Top of the ninth. Yes. Real quick, I'll read it right. Lindor walk, Viento strikeout, Nimmo single, Pete Alonso home run, Iglesias ground out, Winker hit by pitch, Marte single, Taylor fly out. But let's talk about it, right? Devin Williams of the Brewers, let's appreciate him, guys. He's an all-world closer. Since he debuted in 2019, it's really Emmanuel Class A of the Cleveland Guardians, number one, and this guy, number two, in terms of ERA. They're the top two closers since 2019. So what we did let's put it in context. Lindor continues to be that clutch guy. Just gets on base. You're down two, just get on base. Vientos has trouble, but Nimmo, clutch, finds a pitch, rocks it. He's been more aggressive. He's been clutch. And then Pete. Let's set this up for Pete. Pete Alonso with a career low OPS of 788 this year, with a career low home runs 34 this year in non-COVID years, career low in RBIs of 88, in a much publicized contract year. Could have been his last at bat as a Met. He ended the regular season in the midst of a 4-for-37 slump and really hadn't done much in the postseason yet. He dropped a foul ball in the last inning and got laughed at by Brewers fans. Laughed at. The Mets also hadn't homered yet in this whole series. He takes a Williams changeup to right field, and he knew it was gone. At least in this ballpark. Because, by the way, folks, it would not have been a homer in 17 other Major League ballparks. Including Citi Field. That wasn't a homer in Citi Field. And you know this Brewers outfield, they probably would have cashed it if there wasn't a fence. You saw Frelick back there. We'll take it, though. And Pete Alonso becomes the first player in MLB history to hit a go-ahead home run while trailing in the ninth inning or later of a winner-take-all playoff game. Now, an aside on this stat. This was such a big stat when ESPN flashed it, I immediately had to question it. So I fired up my trusty ChatGPT, prompted it, what's the biggest MLB postseason home runs in history, to help jog my memory? And you guess it, it gave me Joe Carter, it gave me Kirk Gibson, Bill Mazeroski, Aaron Boone, David Ortiz, Reggie Jackson, Albert Pujols. Now all of those were either not in a winner-take-all game, or when the home run hitting team wasn't losing, maybe they were tied. Except one, though. Bobby Thompson's shot heard around the world in 1951. Those Giants were down 4-2 when Bobby hit the three-run homer in a tiebreaker game. So it was winner-take-all, but I guess OptiStats or MLB or whatever, they're not considering that a playoff game. So just a side note, but still, what a crazy stat. In some ways, that's the biggest home run in MLB postseason history. I know the stakes wasn't the World Series, but in terms of like time a game, Pete Alonso. To back this home run, right? Think about all the times you as a fan have ever wanted a home run. You wanted to will it, and it doesn't happen. Look, home runs happen between 3-5% of at-bats. So hoping for a home run is literally like asking to hit your number in roulette, which I guess it happens sometimes. But probably worse than that, right? Because considering, you know, you want these in the ninth inning and you're up against a closer. Think of it. When have you wanted a home run? My best example, 2006, NLCS Game 7. My dad and I were at the game. We had great seats, you know, second level up, mezzanine. Oh, God. Remember Shea Stadium, mezzanine? Between home plate and third base. Bottom of the ninth, Mets are down 3-1, first and second on base. Cliff Floyd is up at first, right? And I have a perfect view. He's a lefty. I have a perfect view. I'm just willing to just hit one down the right field line, just get into one. I think he walks. Then Carlos Beltran's up, and we know he strikes out against Wainwright. But I wanted to will those guys. I was there. I had a perfect sight line to follow the ball to right. Didn't happen. Tonight it happened. Tonight, Pete made it happen. And look, these Mets, we've seen versions of willing home runs in the ninth inning. Fans just willing them twice in 1 week, if you count Lindor's on Monday. Three times in a month, if you count Lindor's against the Blue Jays in September, against Bowden Francis. What a time to be a Mets fan. All right, back to the game recap. So yeah, after the home run, Winker gets hit again. what a character. He steals second with his bad back and all. And Starling Marte, another clutch single to right. He's just a good hitter against good pitchers. Winker with a helmet break. It's like we're in WWE here. The helmet's flat, splattering everywhere. Love having this guy in the team. What a moment for him against, you know, where he struggled last year. What an interesting part of the team he is. It's 4-2 with a critical insurance run. Are you kidding me? So let's go to the bottom of the ninth, and Diaz doesn't have any more. So David Peterson's in, who, you know, crushed the Brewers on Sunday. Sal Frelick, the pest, right? He gets on with a single. Joey Ortiz strikes out, which, that's an aside. I had Joey Ortiz in fantasy this year. He was hot. He's the guy they traded Kurt Corbin Burns for. He really tailed off the second half of the year. He did nothing against us. And then Bryce Terang could have been a thorn in the side. Lines it to short. I swear, Francisco Lindor, I think he could have caught it, and I think he knew just to get the one hop. Even with Terang speed, he knew he had him for a double play. That's a gold glove shortstop. That's an MVP-winning shortstop. He let it bounce on purpose. The Mets celebrate. The expected batting average on Terang's ground out and double play was a 440. Jeez, that's incredible. Mets win. That's that. You know, the team earned it. I'm speechless. Let me catch a breath before I put this all in perspective and what it means for me. Whew, what a game. First, some quick post-game comments. I always like to listen to the other teams' press conferences after a win like that. And Pat Murphy, manager of the Brewers, for his credit, was gracious in defeat, though he was also incorrect. He said he wasn't surprised with the Mets surge in the ninth. Lindor, Nimmo, Alonso, they're all stars. They're on long-term contracts. Great job to the Mets. Well, Pat, you're a little incorrect, right? If you had listened to episode 2 of Cleats by Dre, you'd realize that Lindor and Nimmo were not all-stars this year. Lindor has never been one as a Met, and Nimmo has just never been one. And Alonso certainly does not have a long-term contract. But hey, guy went through a lot, Murphy. We're fact-checking. On Milwaukee in general, though, I do hate doing this to them. They're brethren of a similar cloak. At least we have 69 and 86. The Brewers are one of 5 teams without a World Series win to their name. Padres, Rockies, Rays, Mariners. And the Brewers haven't been to the series since 1982. So all in all, hate doing it to them, right? If it wasn't the Mets, I'd be cheering for them against the Braves, against the Dodgers, against the Padres, against the Phillies. With that Murphy quote, let's just quickly revisit some other past Cleats episodes and see how we stand on them, right? Episode 10, Pete Alonso's a number 5, number 6 hitter in our championship form. I'll happily take an L on that one today. Thank God Pete was our number 4 hitter today. Episode 12, the future of pitching in baseball regarding rule changes. How pitchers may have to go 6 innings minimum real soon or else the team faces the penalty. Good on Quintana tonight for getting ready for that with the 6 strong innings. Episode 19, the unviable regional sports networks. Please, how do we keep them viable? We want announcers who know our teams, who have bled with them and have joy with them all season. Episode 7, the Mets are in fact more dangerous than the Braves. See Atlanta, tongues out and all. Episode 6, are the Mets more dangerous than the Yankees? We'll see. And ultimately, episode 3, the great New York championship drought we're in. Well, I called the New York Jets as the next New York champion. But they may not even get the chance with the Yanks and the Mets in the final 8. Okay, a word or two on belief. Let's go back to episode 1, my why for doing this podcast. My tagline is that I bring the hearts and smarts for the thinking and feeling fan. So here you go. I have an infatuation with following sports, partly because it teaches me so much about life. It inspires me. It inspires us. If you listened to my cousin Betty last episode, WNBA superfan, she echoed the sentiment. Look, I'm a married father with 2 kids who's unemployed. I was laid off by my employer of 12 years in April. It ain't been easy finding another job. They ain't just growing on trees in this market. Add a mortgage onto the situation, and sometimes I feel like it's not only 0-0 through 6 innings, but quickly down 2-0 in the bottom of the 7th. Why else would I think it wise to devote not just 3 hours per night keeping up with these Mets and starting a non-revenue generating podcast in my extra hours if I didn't get something from these games, win or lose. And holy cow, gang, if you want to find belief in this world, if you want to find something larger to grab onto, I can't think of a better place to find it than sports, but I bet I'm preaching to the choir. Doesn't it make life a heck of a lot more interesting if you can believe in something? Like if you see your 7-year-old take interest in making rubber bracelets over the summer, and he's good at it, and you ask him kindly to make you an orange and blue one for the Mets and eventually the Knicks, and you see he wants to start a business making and selling the bracelets because he wants some money so he can buy a camera and start a YouTube show. It's another topic. So he sets up a table at the end of your driveway one day with a sign, ready to sell some bracelets. And a nice neighbor comes to buy one, though really no one else comes around at all, so he gets discouraged. And you, still thinking you'd like your Mets Knicks bracelet, which he forgot about, you throw $2 in the pot and place an official order which he accepts. A week goes by, though, and no bracelet yet, and the season's running out of time. Till finally he takes a hint, and he finishes off the blue and orange bracelet Sunday morning, September 29th. I haven't taken that bracelet off yet, guys. We also haven't lost an elimination game yet. And if the next 25 days go anything like the last 5, I may never take this thing off again. So for the Mets, so much more can be said about this team. Chemistry, camaraderie, will, and spirit. But for now, I'll just say a well-earned day off. Until Saturday in Philadelphia. The first ever postseason matchup with the Phillies and the Mets. Per ESPN stats and information, the 1,081 all-time meetings between the Mets and the Phils are the most between any two franchises without a playoff matchup since 1962. You know, for the Mets, there's still 3 more series to go. Those LOL Mets, those Grimace Mets, those Oh My God Mets, Hawk Tua Mets. Let's keep riding. 11 games under 500 in May, now onto the NLDS as one of the 8 last teams in baseball. And that comparable team we talked about on that episode 7, we picked the 2019 World Series champion Nats, who were also 11 games under 500. You look at their path, they got into the playoffs as a wild card. And in their wild card deciding game, they overcame a 2-run deficit in their last time at bat versus, you guessed it, the Milwaukee Brewers. Upward and onward, keep believing, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with anyone in your life who you think could use a pick-me-up, who could use some help believing. Have them skip over the deep game recap. Just be good to other people. All right. Take care. Let's go Mets.